Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on a war for the free world. A man whose intelligence about particularly the jihadist front of that war I've come to regard very, very highly is Patrick Poole. He is an investigative reporter as well as an expert on terrorism and counterterrorism. You find his work rather regularly at PJ Media. He's also contributed to American Thinker and Front Page Magazine, Breitbart News, and other outlets as well. We're always delighted to have him with us. Patrick, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You've been reporting for some time, Patrick, about a phenomenon that I think is among the least understood, at least in official circles. It's often described by those circles as the lone wolf problem. You have quite aptly described it, rather more often than not, as the known wolves problem. Talk, if you would, about that in particular in the context of some recent known wolf activity in Columbus, Ohio.
Well, Frank, in general terms, the known wolf problem is that time and again in these terrorism cases, whether it's here in the U.S. or over in Europe, we've seen cases last year in Canada where these individuals who engage in terrorist acts, I mean, actually killing people, were already known to law enforcement. And yet sufficient action wasn't taken against them to prevent the attack. And this is a growing problem. And the lone wolf phraseology that's thrown about by these countering violent extremism practitioners, in fact, really obscures what's actually happening. They claim that lone wolf, that these people strike out of nowhere and are impossible to identify. But as I've reported consistently, these known wolves are, for the most part, individuals who law enforcement already knew about. And the case I've been writing about here recently involves, here in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, is a case of three young Muslims who ended up joining ISIS. And in fact, these individuals were already known to the FBI. They had tried to engage in some passport fraud to get new passports, and they had been interviewed by the FBI about extremist statements they had made. Well, lo and behold, in July 2014, according to documents that NBC News obtained here several weeks ago and reported on, these three kids were part of the American contingent. One of them was killed in a U.S. airstrike. The other two still live in Raqqa, the capital of ISIS. So here you have basically college students in this particular case. One of the kids grew up in a $2 million mansion out in Palo Alto, California. The other two, who are brother and sister, grew up here in Columbus in a nice suburban area, went to these advanced high schools, were very top-rated students. And so this whole thing, not just the known wolf problem, but it busts all these myths about what drives jihadist terrorism. You know, these kids were not impoverished. They weren't uneducated. In fact, they were directly the opposite. And yet, they end up showing up in Raqqa, joining ISIS in July 2014.
So, Patrick Poole, based on your extensive study of this, and you mentioned this so-called countering violent extremism project of the Obama administration, what is it that is animating these folks, and to what extent does this CVE approach actually wind up obscuring rather than helping us identify, let alone counteract, such threats in our midst?
Well, Frank, as we've discussed in, you know, with our Team B2 reports and other outlets, I mean, it's clearly the jihadist ideology that's really driving the recruitment for the Islamic State and these other terrorist groups. Here just last week, we saw three individuals convicted up in Minneapolis for attempting to join ISIS. And in that case, the cell, the recruiting cell, and there were about 30 people involved. Only three have been charged and convicted so far. It was all centered around a known mosque up in Bloomington, Minnesota. The same case here. These three kids from Columbus who joined ISIS attended, as reported by NBC News, attended a mosque here in Columbus, very well-known mosque. And the reason it's well-known is that a whole number of terrorists have emerged from this mosque in Columbus, Ohio, about a mile from the Ohio State University campus, the largest known Al-Qaeda cell since 9/11, which was based here in Columbus. It was based out of the mosque. And in fact, one of the Al-Qaeda operatives actually taught martial arts and led jihadist camping trips while he was employed by the mosque, according to the Justice Department filings in the Christopher Paul case. We also had the Little Rock shooter who killed Private Andy Long standing in front of a Army recruiting center down in Little Rock back in 2009, I believe it was. And he also attended this mosque here in Columbus when he lived in town. And the former Islamic scholar at the mosque is currently in prison in Egypt on terrorism charges, so something, an individual case I've written quite a bit about. And so we see that this mosque, as I'm reporting today at PJ Media, has become a turnstile for terrorism. And yet when NBC News reported on this case of these three kids who joined ISIS, you know, the head of the mosque was, oh my, you know, well, we, you know, they just appeared once or twice. They lived across the mosque, you know, and lived there for 2 years. And in fact, they lived directly next door to the wife of this senior Al-Qaeda operative who's currently in prison for 20 years.
Wow. Well,
and of course, she said, yeah, well, you know, we, you know, I really didn't know him, despite the fact they lived next door to me for 2 years.
Let me just ask you, Patrick, you've described the phenomenon of known wolves who've gone unidentified or if not unidentified, certainly unaddressed by law enforcement. You've described the role that the mosques are playing, not all of them, of course, but a fair number of them, it seems, in just about every one of these jihadist incidents or interceptions, we find there are ties into a jihadist mosque. The CVE, which we've written about, as you know, in a new book Claire Lopez and I've written called See No Sharia, the Countering Violent Extremism Project and the Disarming of America's First Lines of Defense. As a serious student of this and a first-class reporter on it, Patrick Poole, is there any question that, A, our law enforcement agencies and military and so on are being blinded to these realities by this so-called political correctness, for want of a better term, and B, that organizations like the Council on American Islamic Relations, which the House of Representatives of the state of Louisiana last week urged law enforcement not to have anything to do with, I think quite properly, are part of the problem here, are contributing to our lack of understanding and effective action against these guys.
Exactly. With the Countering Violent Extremism CVE policies, when you look at the White House standards for CVE and the White House Strategic Plan of Action for CVE listed three different areas: community engagement, training law enforcement, and countering propaganda. Well, I did an article at PJ Media here several weeks ago where I looked at these three measures: engagement, training, and counter propaganda. And on by the White House's own measure, in every single one of these areas, CVE has been a complete disaster. Now, of course, some of us would argue that Steve Coughlin, our friend, would say, you know, catastrophic failure, that this is a feature, not a bug, of CVE. You know, this was the whole point, was to derail active counterterrorism. And of course, the administration has done outreach to these extremist groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations. And I think that's why legislators, such as what we saw last week in Louisiana, where they're starting to take notice because these local communities, whether it's Columbus, Ohio, Minneapolis, or the case I'm working today up in Seattle, you know, in every case, there are identifiable signs of these potential terrorist individuals and cells tied to mosques and the very things
and front organizations
that we've discussed already.
Patrick, yeah. We're out of time. We've got to come back to you with this for much, much more detail, and we'll look forward to your reporting on Seattle and elsewhere around the country where you're finding these phenomena at work. Keep the great work you do up at PJ Media, and do Let's Talk Again soon. Next up, Diana West joins us. We'll talk about the communist precedent for the idea of using immigration for subversion. What it might mean for us today. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.